Hello. I'm Isis. I'm with the Tor Project. See if we can actually get these to work. Be handy. We're working on a project right now called the Open Observatory of Network Interference. Two of my friends at the University of Oxford, Anders Sandberg and Nick Bostrom, conducted a survey of experts from various fields concerned with newly emerging technologies and existential risk reduction on their estimations, given certain scenarios, for the extinction of the human race. Of these, three scenarios with the highest median risk estimate were molecular nanotech weapons, superintelligent AI, and war, along with their respective risks for killing all of the humans. Obviously, the survey, as my friends pointed out in their paper, should be taken with a grain of salt. Sure. Milan Cerkovic also notes that the results are subject to various cognitive biases, including unpacking bias and the anthropic effect. Quotes Nick Bostrom. Our approach to existential risks
cannot be one of trial and error. There is no opportunity to learn from errors. The reactive approach, see what happens, limit damages, and learn from experience, is unworkable. Rather, we must take a proactive approach. This requires foresight to anticipate new types of threats and a willingness to take decisive preventive action and bear the costs, moral and economic, of such actions.
Other more accepted theories of the ultimate fate of the human race and the universe altogether include heat death, in which the universe will diminish to a state of no thermodynamic free energy, where entropy production will cease altogether, and therefore the universe will no longer be able to sustain and consume energy, including computation and life. Theoretically, gravitational supercomputers which utilize exotic spacetimes.
Just calm down and speak a little bit clearer.
Okay. Theoretically, gravitational supercomputers which utilize exotic spacetimes, such as Malamud-Hogarth spacetimes, can exist. However, the current entropy of the universe is still regarded to be unknown due to the fact that contributions from black holes is as yet unestimated. A paper by Charles Egan and Charles Lineweaver on that topic states that the entropy of a general gravitational field is difficult to quantize. From this, it is clear that should we wish to continue existence, it is necessary to adopt a survival strategy of utilitarianism with a maximization of thermodynamic entropy. The fate of the universe, the fate of all other things, depends upon it. A brief explanation of thermodynamic entropy and entropy in informational theory. So thermodynamic entropy is defined as Boltzmann's constant multiplied by the log of the inverse of the probability of a system being in a particular macro state. Whereas in information theory, entropy is the measure of the amount of information that is being missed before reception, and is sometimes referred to as Shannon entropy. The two concepts are related, and the link between thermodynamic and information entropy was developed in a series of papers by Edwin Jaynes. One may think of Shannon entropy as Boltzmann's constant, divided by log 2 times the number of yes or no questions that must be asked in order to determine the microstate of the system, given that we know the macrostate. If we're to take up entropism in our plot to save humanity, How do we increase entropy? The answer is simple. We increase the amount of available information. My apologies for the general slide switching back and forth. I'm not sure what's going on with that. Sorry. Here, the bigger picture begins to make sense for us computer scientists. We need a network, a healthy network with high node connectedness, routing diversity, and information availability. This is entirely antithetical to established information security practices. Taking, for example, the old adage that the best way to secure a computer is to never connect it to a network. If information is so empowering, so inspiring, if literally everything that any society can accomplish is affected by the time that it takes to relay information, why would anyone want to keep it private? Because creating information scarcity, a false information scarcity, generates wealth, and it's such a valuable resource that we've built sets of professions centered around hoarding and guarding it. And in total farce, we've named this self-crippling information security. Security and privacy are not the same thing, as many have often stated before me. There are few, if any, reasons why you or I would need to know what Talith did on Tuesday night or what news article she's reading online right now. However, we can have high information availability and privacy because Talith can go online and post a communique anonymously on her reasons for despising her government, and then participate in community discussions to develop strategies for revolution. Obviously, anonymity and circumvention technologies such as Tor are useful here. However, to continue our work to make Tor and other technologies better, we need a system for detecting when censorship is occurring, and thus, UNI. So UNI is a project to create a global censorship detection platform. We think that other people should be able to use our work as much as possible, and thus we're making it into a modular framework. It's largely written in Twisted Python, but it also uses Scapy, and it has a test writing API. Things that we are currently working on are making our reports interfaceable with other projects like Project Bismarck, which is a project written mostly in Lua and runs on routers to also detect censorship events. The API also comes with several test templates, which are often at a protocol level. I'm not very good at giving talks. I'm sorry. I suppose I don't know what you as hackers, and if any of you are activists as well, what you would like to know about UNI or what you would like it to test for. And so rather than continue to stutter and give a bad talk, I would rather open the floor for discussion and questions and hear what you guys would like to hear about UNI. I'm much better at answering questions than giving talks. In the back? Okay. clearly studying physics and English, never included a public speaking course. I'm kind of kicking myself for that.
First of all, how do you get the idea of developing the ONI project? I mean, we know that it's a censorship software. It's a software which detects censorship. But how did it came the need and the idea of developing such a software? Sorry.
The need for it. Well, if Tor is blocked, obviously circumvention technologies don't work if we don't know why the circumvention technology isn't working. It creates this loop. So we need to detect censorship. We need to detect when Tor is blocked, and we need to also detect why people can't access certain resources.
Just a silly question, but with censorship, how do you define censorship, and how do you distinguish that between general content availability problems?
We're defining censorship as content that is unreachable or changed.
But that implies intent. There is a question of intent.
Obviously, if something's just missing or the server is down, that does not count as censorship, no. Yes.
What is your next slide?
What is my next slide? It's a very blankish slide that has my alias and the alias email address and the GPG key to that alias and the Twitter alias. What? Yeah, that's the last one. Did you think there was gonna be a paste of an RSA private key or something?
How does it work exactly? Can you tell us a bit about the inner mechanics of UNI?
What was that?
How does it work?
How does it work? Well, UNI has a runner which handles scheduling and calls tests. Tests can be written by other people, although we have core tests bundled in. Currently, we have tests for things like detecting capped portals, detecting HTTP header modification, like DNS tamperment, we don't want to focus as much on figuring out all the possible ways that censorship can occur, because this is a very large set. We would rather make it as easy as possible for someone who's experiencing censorship to write a test to prove that this is occurring and have data available and published openly that other people can verify by running the same test.
So it's kind of a platform that you set up for activists and militants to be able to denounce censorship or mm-hmm. to spot censorship where it exists.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Hello. Is this data fed back into the Tor project, presumably in the distribution of where Tor bridges should go?
Sorry?
Is the data that this project creates used in the deciding of where the Tor project puts the Tor bridges?
I'm still not able to hear you or hear the question. Is there a way to turn that mic up?
He's asking if the Tor bridge necessity came out with the UNI necessity. I mean, if they were developed in the same time or not.
If I understand. No, not quite. So the Tor bridges, which is how the Tor project get around censorship.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, the Tor project need to know where to put those bridges. Does this UNI project feed into that decision?
Part of the project does include a system for detecting when and how Tor bridges are blocked. However, we distribute the bridges, but we don't control where they're created. They're run by volunteers. They're essentially just private relays that are not published. So yes, UNI will include a way to detect when bridges are blocked.
Okay, thank you.
You mentioned, you talked about an API, and I just looked at the documentation that's published right now on the subject of towards developing an API for Uni. What is the current status of any kind of API to get at this data set? So if I wanted to write my own application, where
would
that?
To get at the data sets we have so far, if you go to, our documentation is at uni.torproject.org. And that will explain test writing, it will, everything about the project so far. However, we are currently deploying. We're deploying on MLab, and we're still working out a few of the kinks in the backend. And so once that's done, which should be relatively soon, within the next couple months, MLab will be publishing our reports.
Awesome, thanks.
So you mentioned that you would like as many people as possible, ideally, to contribute tests to the platform. How are the current tests implemented, and what are your ideas, if any, for making it as easy as possible for as many people as possible to write tests? I mean, ideally, the tests would maybe be describable even without programming. Or do you think
that
no?
would be ideal? Although, if you could program in plain English, you could make a neural network that could program
something like
and
English.
And that would.
But so
that's
okay.
A large
let's start with what are the current tests? How are the current tests implemented? Are they?
They're written in Twisted Python, and so essentially, to write a test, you just subclass this NetTest case class that we have, and that will include methods for doing common things.
Okay.
If anything feels kludgy or awkward or isn't working, then we've done something wrong and we need to fix that. And so if you experience any of that, you should just let us know.
Okay. And yeah, okay. Thank you.
Hmm?
Hey. Can you tell us about other projects that kind of similar field, and how is it different from the OpenNet initiative, for example?
Sorry, one more time.
I was wondering how it does it compare to other similar projects, like the OpenNet initiative, for example?
How we're interfacing with other projects?
How Uni is different from these projects, who also tries to detect censorship or?
Well, so far there has not been a project with entirely open data and open methodologies. There have been other censorship detection projects that have been created. However, they generally give you just your own data set back and not all of the data available. And when they publish data, we've seen ridiculous things like CSV files that say censored. Yes, level one, country, and so with Uni, we would like to protect user privacy as much as possible, and so everything is opt-in. We won't publish IP address, we won't take packet captures, nothing that could identify the user, and the backend submits the reports over Tor. So, users should be unidentifiable. However, certain tests, obviously, and those tests will warn you, are going to include data that can identify you. Obviously, anything with packet capture is going to identify you. Let's see. Does that answer?
Hey, I'm wondering, do you guys have any plans for how to publicize the data about what's being censored and or put pressure on the organization censoring yet?
Recommendations. That is something that we would largely like to not concern ourselves with. Interpreting the data would would be subject to various biases, and that's really none of our business. There are lots of other projects to interpret the data. For instance, there is Quadrature in France, and I can't think of the other projects off the top of my head. I'm blanking on that. But if the data is openly available and someone does make an interpretation of it and links back to the data, someone else can come along and say, like, no, you're clearly like doing this wrong. Here's the data and here's what I see. And also, we're collecting way too much data to be able to interpret all of it. So in certain cases, like particular members of the Tor project may be interested, like on Tor blog, for example, of publishing a report on what's going on for Tor specifically, because that's largely what we're interested in. But there's going to be tons of other data that other parties should interpret.
So if I had Uni installed on a bunch of boxes that I was, you know, trying to send around the world to friends, how much user interaction would be required to get that data back from the users? How close are you to, say, you know, an Uni box that somebody can just plug in and start playing with? Or is there a lot of requirement on the end user's end to start getting results back?
Would this box include hardware? Do you mean just literally plug it into the wall and leave it? That is something that we would love to have. We're not at that stage yet. There's another project in Tor that we're working on called the Tor Router. And this is going to use an all open specification motherboard that was designed recently. And so hopefully Tor Router will include the option to like turn on Uni and send in reports as well. That's a ways down the line, probably about a year from now, rough estimate.
You spoke in the abstract of a talk, there is the mention of discussion surveillance. Can you tell us a bit more about this?
Sorry?
About discussion surveillance.
I'm not understanding, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm just reading from the abstract. We are working to create a peer review taxonomy for discussion surveillance and censorship. So how do you actually know if somebody's watching a discussion you're having? I'm not sure if I'm interpreting correctly what's written, actually.
Yeah. I'm still not. I think that something's weird with that mic. I'm not able to hear you for some reason. Okay. Is there a way we can turn that mic up? Or speak louder? Okay. Surveillance detection. Right. I don't know why I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry. So we have planned to eventually include a test which will include porting. The EFF developed this tool. It's called Switzerland. And eventually we have to rewrite Switzerland and modify it quite a bit. But that Switzerland will eventually be an Uni test. And so what Switzerland is two users have some sort of peer-to-peer connection, and they also send hashes of all of their sets of packets to a third-party server called the Switzerland server. And the Switzerland server basically watches these hashes, and then when it sees a difference between the two, it says, like, hey, wait, send me what you guys actually just sent. Like, send me the packet captures, because something weird just happened. And then it dynamically masks out fields in the packet headers for things that, like, NAT routers commonly munge your packets. And, like, just, there's a lot of stuff that just, like, happens, but it's benign. And so it'll dynamically mask out these headers as it's happening, and then try to determine where and if something malicious is occurring.
Okay.
Can you give us an example of a test that is currently working and able to detect censorship? Like an unit test that is implemented.
I'm not able to hear anyone.
Can you give us an example of an unit test that is implemented and is capable of detecting censorship somewhere?
An example of us detecting censorship?
Yeah, of an unit test.
One of the first things we detected was censorship occurring in Palestine. This is when we were first rewriting all the really old code that was basically just scripts. Arturo and I were working on the API design about a year ago, and we were sitting in my living room for 3 days, just like madly hacking, and then like try to convince ourselves to go to NoiseBridge and be like, no, and then just like keep sitting there and like eating only like rice noodles for like 3 days. A user in Palestine contacted us and said, like, I think something weird is happening. And we quickly wrote a bunch of tests and ran the tests and were able to catch the censorship. And then it was quite frightening, actually. Like, 2 days later, the State Department has this briefing that they have every morning. And the person who was giving the briefing, like, the first question they were asked was about UNI, and she was asked, so these kids in San Francisco, they recently detected censorship in Palestine. Is the U.S. Department funding that? And she was just like, next question. And then the next question was also about UNI. He was like, well, why didn't you guys detect this censorship and report it? And she was like, blah, blah. And then they asked another question. They're like, why did these kids detect it first? And so that was the first time we caught something. It was really frightening to watch the State Department talking about you.
But I mean, what did the test do? Like, did it do DNS queries and test that it...
That test, I believe, was the HTTP header modification.
Is there any other question about UNI?
Have you detected any sort of censorship reaction to UNI so far, where you have, you know, the test succeeds, but the rest of the communication fails? Has that been an issue?
Yes, actually. There have been occurrences where we have detected censorship and then we have watched the DPI boxes change their configuration as we continue to run tests, which was really frustrating and frightening, and a large reason why we're focusing on decreasing our fingerprintability in our tests. Because obviously if they can catch you running the test, it's like, for example, how ISPs will up your bandwidth if you go to any sort of URL that includes speed test. No, it works. They'll throttle your bandwidth until you go to a URL that says speed test, and then it'll all of a sudden spike back up. And so, we would like the running of the tests itself not to mess with the data we're collecting, like that way, the way that we saw that one time.
So I heard that you also are interested in steganography. Do you see some good opportunity for a crossover there, where something like UNI could be done in band?
Could you elaborate a bit more?
No, not really. I just had the thought.
Okay.
Well, if I had an idea, I would give it to you, but sorry, no.
I don't know how we would really apply steganography. Steganography is largely, like, not useful. It's cute. It's fun. It's not cryptography. It doesn't provide any security. I don't know what we would... Sorry, I don't know.
Anyone else? My last question was, have you ever tried to develop something for using machine learning for novelty detection and integrate it with Uni? I think there is something already done or developed.
For developing what?
For detecting censorship using machine learning or, for example, novelty detection software or something like that.
Yes.
Have you thought about it or are you working on it?
Yes, we have. This is something we are currently working on. For example, the bridge tests that I was writing had this very crazy design at one point that used several techniques for machine learning. That didn't work out as well as planned, and it's being revised at this point.
Perfect. Okay, so thank you. If there was a guy who wanted to tell something for 2 minutes about security, I don't know where he disappeared. But otherwise, we can proceed with the next speaker. Hey, where
Thanks.
Are you? Yoo-hoo. No, he's not here. So 5 minutes before the next talk.